The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is a Patriots Monday on a Tuesday, or a Mic'd Up Monday, whatever you prefer. And New England Patriots head coach Mike Vrabel is brought to you this morning by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health, with six New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com. By John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains won't flow. And by Northeastern Savings Bank, the leading financial option for New England businesses and the families that power them. Northeastern Savings Bank, upgrade to local member DIF FDIC. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning.
Did they
like our advertisement last week with the men's health and the clean drain, or how did that?
I think they did. Yeah, they did. They liked that. They reached out.
We were talking about Wiggy's drain. Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. They actually reached out. They wanted to know if you need any help.
No, I don't.
No, everything's okay. Listen, I'll tell you who doesn't need any help, and that is your Buckeyes. Nice win over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a slow game. I thought the fourth quarter brought some action, but we'll see how it goes. I watched a little bit of it and go from there.
You played against an overrated Manning at one point in your career, so you can relate.
Well done.
I was here.
Social media is a brutal, brutal place.
Oh, terrible.
And it never misses.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, some of the stuff is just.
Do you look at any of that?
It's hard not to. You know, I mean, it's hard not to see some of the references and just, people send them, and then it's just like just one thing after another, and it's just like you didn't think it could get any better, and then it does, and it's just.
It's first 30 seconds of his day.
Fun.
Yeah.
First 30 seconds of your day is looking at social media. That's what you said.
Get the news.
Yeah. It was a new Manning face. It was this all the rage, you know. You created the old one. Now there's another one.
It was, there were some good ones.
Yeah. I was here Wednesday night for the kickoff, and you talked about this team's identity. In fact, you said that that we should all ask any of the players that were there on Wednesday night, and they ought to be able to tell us what the identity is. What is, in your mind, the identity of this football?
Well, again, we can talk about it again, and I've heard and learned that I see better than I hear, and so our identity is going to have to be what we put on tape. But ideally, you know, what we would like is our play style, our play demeanor, how hard we play. I mean, I think it certainly starts there. We have to, be smart with the football. We have to have guys that take the football away. You know, I think that looking for opportunities to do that, finding ways to tip passes that get intercepted, finding ways to hit guys hard enough to knock the ball loose. We need guys that are willing to protect a guy with the ball. And I think that you're going to see that, and hopefully that we get the right guys that care about, you know, if we throw it to Wiggy, you know, we all need to go and protect him. There's one football, there's five guys that are eligible. The quarterback decides who to throw to. Everybody else has to just go and finish. We would love to play with great fundamentals, understand the details of the play, and make great decisions, you know, that don't cost the team. And I get penalties happen. Penalties are going to occur. But I think the things that when it's a decision-making, is it full body weight on the quarterback? Is it a blindside hit, or do I high screen on a punt return? Defenseless receiver, being the second guy in, all these things where I feel like that's a decision. That's a conscious decision. Hopefully we're making great decisions, and that we can take advantage of bad football.
When you look at the actual scheme, Mike, you know, you come from obviously Tennessee, where you ran the ball first and then you try to play good defense. Are you going to be a week-to-week game plan type of team, or are you going to say, we want to try to run the ball first and play great defense, or is that just going to change based on who your opponent is?
Well, I mean, I think it changes based on who your opponent is. I think our best player in Tennessee for most of those years was our running back. And so I think you do what your teams are equipped for and have the ability to adjust. And, you know, I thought when we had to throw the ball and we threw it on our terms and you let plays marry and partner with each other and build, that there's complementary plays. You know, I would think that hopefully the majority of our first and second down offense, if you're talking offensively, you know, you have to be able to run the football. You have to be able to marry those passes up. You have to be able to throw some screens to
to guys. It's hard to live in a drop back passing game in this league. I just think that to do that is play in and play out is hard. And so you don't want to end up living in that game. There's times where the game dictates that you'll have to, but you know, we always want to be balanced and do what the defense, you know, will allow us to do on our terms.
When it comes to Drake, he's made a point to say that throughout the preseason, he's felt like he's been a bit jittery right off the jump, and he needs to control that so that he makes less mistakes. What have you, as his head coach, seen him do to prepare for week one to be better at that?
Well, I think it's about just his preparation to not the preparation of the game or the game plan. It's just, you know, making sure that he's in a place that he's comfortable when the game starts. And again, I want them all to be excited. We are going to need energy and passion and enthusiasm, but that can't override our job. And so making sure that that we get into drives and we try to structure practice the same way we would with the games and try to focus on that and how we start the game and the break and trying to finish strong and win the second half.
I know you talked a little bit about Jabril Peppers yesterday, said it wasn't a scheme thing. Looking at it from the uneducated outside, which is where I sit, I know there's, you know, in some areas not necessarily a lot of depth on this team. How difficult is it to make a decision like that to release a guy who looks like somebody, you know, who should be on this 53-man roster?
Yeah, those are always tough. I mean, those are always tough. They're difficult. We're trying to do what's best for the team. And again, we try to make decisions that we feel like are going to help us in the long term, in the short term. And those are difficult. I had a personal relationship with Jabril. I loved getting to know him and coach him. And we're just trying to get it right. And obviously understand where we are from the youth and the veterans that we have in the position room. And how it was and how it sat.
Mike, the roster turnover, I think it's about 50% from last year. And it feels like it has been a point of emphasis to get new leaders. I think all the captains are new. Two of the six captains, I believe, are people that were brought in this offseason. How much of your approach to this year was predicated upon making sure that the leaders that were 4-13 the last 2 years were not the leaders this year?
And somebody asked me that yesterday, and I've never, and I don't think anybody else has been intentional on that or with that. And I can see, you know, that's kind of how things go when there's change and there's turnover. And some of those players were free agents. Some of those players we moved on from, you know, in the offseason. Some of them have been currently, but that was never anyone's intent. We're just trying to, you know, build the position groups and build the team and try to figure out what we need. And, you know, leadership, I think, will always continue to grow and evolve. And I hope that we have many more leaders than just the six that were named captain.
And on that, Steph Diggs was one that a lot of people were surprised was not named a captain, given that we had heard he'd been leading the receiving group. Were you surprised that the players didn't vote for Steph Diggs?
With this league, I don't think, I've tried to use the word surprised. I think, you know, Steph got votes. And again, we just try to look at where the voting came out and recognize how the players voted.
Mike, one of the things as a Pats fan, I woke up, can't remember when it was, and I said, damn, Michael Parsons is in Green Bay. Were you guys in on him?
You know, we continue to have conversations about all players that are available. You know, Mike, I think you love saying Micah Parsons.
Yeah, so. I mean, I would have loved to have seen that. The first jersey I would have went and got out.
No Vrabel jersey.
Do you have any Vrabel jerseys?
You have jerseys?
I do have a Vrabel jersey.
When he says
again, he's a dynamic player, great player. But you know, just, you know, we weren't, that wasn't something that, you know, we really invested a lot of time or resources in. I think when you just try to look at what we feel like is best for us right now, that wasn't entertaining that specific, you know, transaction.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, it's
generational. But my guy Sean would say generational player that you get at a bargain price.
Yeah, I don't, you know, maybe bargain price. It just, you know, I think we just have to be very smart on building this thing, and I hope that everybody else sees it the same way outside of here. And we want to bring in players that feel like give us the best chance, but also, you know, we have to build some depth here to this roster, and you do that from the draft, and just it hasn't been, you know, we'll call it what it is. It hasn't been real great. The depth of the roster has not been through our draft the last handful of years, and that has to change. We all know that. So we'll focus on that when we get there in April. Right now it's, you know, putting guys in roles that have some versatility and building the game day roster and all these different things. But you know, I think the best teams in the league draft well. They develop their players, they re-sign them, you know, and then they carefully choose the players that they want to add in free agency.
Could you say that the drafts that being bad the last several years precluded you from trading first round picks because you need those?
No, I was just saying that when we build this thing and moving forward, we want to build it and make sure that we're building through the draft. And then again, like I said, retaining the players that we feel like have developed and have earned contracts. And you know, while Micah Parsons is a great player, you know, just, you know, probably wasn't the best fit or the right time, I think, for us.
You added Tommy Cutlets to the roster. Did you have to negotiate with Sean Stellato, or
I did it?
Okay. No.
And when you claim somebody, you don't have to negotiate with them.
All right, so you just take them.
You just grab their hair and drag them.
So you don't have to really interact with
them. Big St. Anthony.
Yeah, he was
St. Anthony's feast.
Yeah, he was at the feast.
He was everywhere.
Why not?
The Sean Stellato. I guess it's like Christmas Day for Sean. How you doing?
He's going to go do a lot of talks at St. John's Prep.
How you doing?
Yeah. Back to Steph Diggs. Last week we talked to you about him. You said you expect him to contribute to this team a lot. Now that it's game week, he's still on track to be able to go week one and be good?
Yep. I would imagine that as of today, he'll be out there.
Great. What's the update on Gonzalez? And I know he didn't practice yesterday.
He didn't practice yesterday. That's the only update I can give you. I can't haven't seen anything from. I haven't met with the trainers. I got to see you guys before, and then I'll see.
But that's injury.
The trainers.
That's injury related. You know, people look at a young player sometimes and wonder, hey, is there some kind of quiet hold?
Oh no! I mean, I said he's working hard to come back, and when he's ready to get back out and practice, hopefully that's this week, and then we can decide and go from there.
Mike, you look at Will Campbell, first game of the season. I think you, better than anybody, can give him the advice he needs, especially to see a guy like Max Crosby and maybe some of the techniques and some of the, you know, I don't know, veteran kind of tips that you might be able to give him to help with a guy like that. What are you saying to Will about this matchup?
Well, it's going to be with all of them, and then Max can line up wherever he wants, and or they can put him wherever they want. I think it has to be for everybody blocking him. He has a certain play style, you know. And I think if you drop your head, he's going to jump around, and if you're over aggressive, he's going to, you know, try to make you miss. I think just a certain play style of just making sure we're not overextended to where. And again, he has a very unique play style where he'll jab and jump around, and he uses his length and athleticism as opposed to, let's say, maybe more of a power player. Not that he can't do that, but again, he makes his money with instinctiveness and jumping under. If you overreach him, he's coming under and he's getting in the backfield.
Do you tell him be patient?
Well, it's making sure that you can't sit there and wait. You have to, if in a run game, you have to go and get on him, but you have to make sure that you're not out of control and that your head's up and your eyes are up and that you're able to redirect and again, not be overly aggressive when you're trying to block players like that. And again, it'll change based on who the player is and who you're going against, but that would be, you know, Max's skill set.
Did you watch the UNC TCU game last night?
Probably, maybe a few snaps. That's all the
You saw the best part. First drive. First drive.
Thing of beauty.
Yeah. It's a thing of beauty.
If they would have ended a game after the first drive, would have been good.
You guys seem to be excited about that.
No. I'm rooting for the guy, and I think, you know, I mean, you coached in college. It takes a while, don't you think, to get a program going? Come in there like that?
I don't know. Urban Meyer won 12 of the first 12 games at Ohio State, so it didn't take him long. That's my experience in college football.
All right. Okay. No. But we have the comp.
But isn't it
I think I can only imagine the landscape of college football now and the, you know, hey, who are you? Oh, I just came from wherever. And
right.
I'm sure it's probably not as easy outside of the top few programs.
Right. Ohio State guys have to take a pay cut when they get to the NFL.
Yeah, maybe. Hopefully.
But isn't that
put it under the budget line for winning.
Yeah.
Right there.
But isn't that the difficult thing that obviously Bill's going to have to navigate through? I know when you coach
I don't know what he's going to have to navigate. You know what I mean? I've got plenty to navigate here.
Was your son happy with the Eagles win on Saturday?
Yeah, he was. He was excited for his first game. And, he got to wear a headset, so he's official.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, the Mike Vrabel era gets underway Sunday, and so
yeah, it does. It's here,
and we wish you the best of luck. I know Wednesday night you sort of refused to answer the question about your favorite restaurant in Boston.
Well, that doesn't. You know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of places I go to, so why would I? You know, I mean, it's like, who's your favorite co-host?
Oof. Well, I mean,
Swiggy.
I like kind of like them all equally.
Of the three choices he had, I would not pick Wiggy. I'd put it out there right now.
I heard.
That was your favorite teammate, though. Come on.
Well, yeah, he was fun.
I heard from some people down in the Seaport, they were like, wait a second, guy can't throw us a little plug out there?
Yeah, I guess. A bunch of everybody's pillow talking. Yeah, that's the problem with this place. Everybody pillow
rats.
Talks.
We got rats.
Yeah. Whoever gets
restaurant rats.
It's all about
put
the
a name on it or I ain't paying attention.
I'll live
my life, you live yours outside of here. How about that?
It's all about the freebie.
No, I don't mind paying.
No.
That's fine. Wiki does.
Yeah,
we already asked you for a jersey.
Yeah, we've already been. We're always been two different pay scales, even when we played. But I have to ask this question.
You got a parking pass for Sunday, you wouldn't even pay for it.
I can't get one here, believe me.
You can't get a pat? We'll get you a parking.
Okay. Yeah. You know what's interesting, though? In
North Street entrance. We'll get you right back. All
right, I was trying to come back. Wait. Brock Bowers. I want to, talk about Georgia Bulldog like myself. But
oh, here we go.
No. But
that's where the comparison stops. Very, very good player. Very athletic.
But the matchup nightmare that he presents.
Yep. He treat him as a wide receiver. He will play in line. He will block at great length. I think the biggest thing that he continues to gain speed as he's down the field and trying to locate and find the ball. He doesn't lose speed. I think that's you have to treat him as a receiver. They do a lot with him. The full route tree, they'll take shots to him. So that'll be an important matchup. And also, just being able to know where he is and be able to find him and understand, what he's trying to do from the different locations that they put him in.
All right. Well, we'll let you go get ready for week one. Thanks.
Appreciate
coach.
It, guys.
All right. Mike Vrabel is brought to you by Cross Insurance. Cross Insurance, the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots. It is a Patriots Monday on a Tuesday. We are at Gillette Stadium. We'll be right back.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. Alex Cora is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Alex Cora, I don't even have pleasantries today. We got the news of the day. I got to ask you about Roman Anthony, what we saw last night. Do you have an update on Roman Anthony's status? Is he going on IL?
Yeah, he's going to IL. He has an oblique strain. Timetable, we don't know. He's a mother one, so usually takes from 4 to 6 weeks.
Just the impact, him not being in your lineup, clearly when he was brought up, he had a major impact, especially in that leadoff
Just what's he going to mean to not be in your lineup anymore?
Well, he's one of our best offensive players, but it sounds harsh, but we have to move on, right? We've got to, put that uniform on today and try to win a game. And we've been through this before, right? Casas and, we traded Rafi. There's been a lot of stuff with this team, and we've been able to keep going. So I expect the group to do the same thing.
So if Roman is indeed out anywhere 2-4 weeks, who knows, would you slide Duran back into the leadoff spot? Is there somebody else perhaps? Because Roman seemed to just jive with being in the leadoff spot so well, letting the offense was rolling like that.
Yeah, today's a lefty, so Eden is going to lead off. I think Duran's hitting sixth or seventh because he's a lefty. But, most likely against righties, we'll get back to Duran leading off and Alex hitting second.
We talked to you a lot about managing the clubhouse, whether it's the trade deadline or trades earlier in the season. How do you manage something like this? Because we're all human beings, and it sucks when you see a teammate that's really good and plays a really big role in our operation go down. How do you manage that?
Yeah, I think if you hear Alex's interview yesterday, this is part of the business, right? Now it's about going in there, out there and winning games. Don't try to do too much, including him. We just had that conversation, me and Alex. So, like I said, we put ourselves in a great position, to fight for the division, win the division. So nothing's going to change, We're a man down, but somebody's going to step up and come here and contribute, and, we're going to be okay.
Garrett O'Shea doesn't have his best night. Doesn't have his best stuff last night. People, of course, are going to say, well, he's, hasn't worked this much in his career. Just your thoughts on his performance last night and going forward.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of pitches in the middle of the plate, and they put good swings on it, and that's going to happen. It happens to Scooble, it happens to him, and it happens to DeGrom, They're human. The cool thing about it is yesterday, he's been picking us up the whole season. We picked him up yesterday, and now he'll be ready. I think his next one is in Sacramento, if I'm not mistaken, but he's healthy. The stuff was good. He just made 4 mistakes, and they took advantage of it.
We have a team in Sacramento? I know. But the ERA splits between when he pitches on 4 days rest versus 5 days rest seem semi-significant at this point. And as you're heading towards the postseason, I know nothing is given yet. It's got to be earned. Any further consideration to maybe seeing if you can find some extra rest for him along the way?
I think the next one, he gets an extra day. And then I don't know schedule-wise if we get like 3 more off days, but we'll stay the course like we've been doing the whole season.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora joining us here at Fenway Park and WEEI Afternoons. Let's go in a positive direction. We were here Friday in the studio. There was a buzz for Peyton Tolley's debut, and then he not only lived up to the buzz, maybe surpassed. He was better than even I expected. What'd you see from him? And I know a lot of you had said you didn't think the moment would be too big for him. It certainly wasn't.
Man, he showed up at the ballpark like around 1:30. And
was he sweaty then? Because he was sweaty on the mound.
No. But in the clubhouse, I got a message from Chad Tracy, our AAA manager. Like, this is a guy that, I played with Kevin Brown. Remember Kevin Brown?
Yep.
So Kevin Brown, 4 days he was a great teammate. The 5th day he was, he wasn't great, you needed to stay away from him, don't talk to him, locked in. That's the total opposite of Tolley. He's a great guy, great sense of humor. He was very relaxed through the day, and at one point, we were talking about a rain delay. It didn't happen, He came to the office like, hey, are we on time? I'm like, yeah, let's go. And he went out there like a 6:10 to just take a look at everything. One of the things I tell these kids, embrace this. Like, there's only one MLB debut, right? And you have to take advantage of it and just enjoy it. And he did, man. Like, that first inning was electric. I think the fans understood how important it was. Not only for him, but for the organization, what this kid represents. And, the stuff was great. Obviously, we got to be careful, with the pitch count. I think the next one will be in the range of 85 to 90. When he went out in the 6th, I thought about it. I'm like, man, we're pushing him. But he was so efficient that we got to go, just didn't happen. So just paying attention to the innings, paying attention to the pitch count. Velocity went down a little bit, but nothing too big, right? And there's a presence, 6'5", 250 on that mound. We got the beast, and now we got that other beast, you know, and we're very happy with the performance.
Well, how about the beast? No brainer to lock him up for another year. What your thoughts on getting
rolled? The other one, I mean, it's amazing that at his age, what he's doing on the field is great, but the preparation, you know, is great. I've been telling you guys, you know, when you go on the road, you know, I usually go in the mornings to for my morning run. He's already sweating. You know, he's coming back from the gym. And the guy, he's a great teammate. He's embraced this city. He loves it here. And, you know, credit to front office, man. You don't do that very often, you know. I mean, he's having a historic season. Usually they'll wait, you know, test the free agent market and see what happens, you know, and put pressure on us, you know, to make something happen in the winter. But he was very vocal about it, and I'm glad that we got it done.
As far as Peyton Tolley goes, again, looking toward October baseball potentially, what role could you see him possibly occupying? Like, because when that happened at that moment, you take him out, I think, at 80 or 81 pitches. I was thinking, you know, Weissert comes in, has a tough inning, a winnable game gets away. But I was thinking at the time, like, you know what? It's a 2-0 game in October. That's not Weissert that – you're starting to smile there, right there. Like, that's not Weissert that comes in. That's Peyton Tolley that comes in potentially.
You know, we still got work to do. And as you guys know, I'm not afraid to be aggressive with the relievers and the starters in October. Obviously, his situation is a little bit different because he's still a kid. But, you know, we're in the business of winning. And if he's in the bullpen, he's in the bullpen. If he's as a starter, he's a starter. But the guy is going to impact this, man. His fastball plays. You saw the swings. That's what I – pay attention to.
He's energy. He's pure hot.
He loves it. And, you know, he's a great teammate. I told him the other day, now you can stay because his first three games, we were 0-3 since he got here. And then we won. I said, now you can stay with us, you know.
Willie or Abreu, it seems like it's been a little slower maybe than anybody had hoped or thought. Does that put a little more pressure on the outfield with now Roman Anthony going down? And is he close, Willie?
Not close. Feeling better, but the running part of it is the one that is taking longer than expected. He can take grounders, he can hit and do all that stuff. But, you know, when we get running, then the process is going to speed up. So hopefully we can accomplish that at the end of the week.
Nathaniel Lowe has been like a different player now that he's come here from Washington. What do you credit that to?
I mean, pennant race, Fenway, just an opportunity to reset your market probably, right? He was having a tough season over there, and you know, another one from the front office. You know, we saw an opportunity to add a left-handed bat with experience. Been there, done that, right? A World Series champ, Gold Glover, Silver Slugger. The first day he took BP here, and this happened too with Kyle a few years ago. Left-handed hitter that can pepper the ball the other way against the wall. It gives you an opportunity to make later decisions. You don't have to commit to certain areas. You can let the ball get deep and you can drive it to left field. And then when you feel comfortable, then you start driving the ball. And he's been great for us. Very happy that, you know, he's performing. And we'll see what happens, man. But so far, very similar to Iglesias in 21. The only difference is, like, if we make it to October, this guy can play in October. Iggy wasn't able to do that.
So the news broke last Friday, right around lunchtime, I believe. We were here, but we didn't get a chance to talk to you about it, about Walker Buehler and the release. That must have been kind of tough. Can you just sort of, like, walk us through how that went down and how it feels now a few days removed?
Yeah, I mean, we try everything. He tried everything, too. And I'm glad that he landed with the Phillies. You know, he's going to be okay. I think stuff-wise, we talked the whole season that we were getting close. The thing is the strike throwing, right? Like, he walked a lot of people. If you look back, there was an outing in Houston. He went 6 innings. They scored 4. We had 2 outs. We walked Caratini, and then Diaz hit a homer. If he doesn't walk Caratini and gets him out, it's 6 innings, two runs, and gaining confidence, right? Because he was coming from the San Diego one. He goes to Houston, pitches well, and I bet, you know, from there he was going to take off, but it didn't happen. Put him in the bullpen. Jazz hit a homer on a pitch down in the zone, similar to the pitch he hit out early in the season. And then we have to make decisions, you know, and he's a pro. He's a guy that I really respect, very, very smart kid, and I believe he's going to help the Phillies, you know, win a lot of games over there.
We've had some, even going back to last week, yesterday, some, I guess, erroneous reports, false reports with Kyle Harrison, where we were kind of led to believe he might be starting games. What's going on with him? What's going on with these reports? What's that all about?
Yeah, I mean, people coming to conclusions, you know, as far as like roster and all that. We're in good shape today, so we're going in a bullpen day, and then we have an off day tomorrow, and then we'll reassess the situation of our roster for Friday. But we feel like today we can go to Bernie. We got Matsy for two, a lot of left-hander hitters for in that lineup, so we'll mix and match, knowing that May it can go three innings today, and that's good for us. You know, we're gonna use May in the bullpen today, and then he'll be back in the rotation next week, and we'll go from there.
Is Harrison healthy? Is he an option on the horizon?
He's always been an option. It just happens that today we felt like, you know what, this is the route we're going, because we can mix and match with them with the lefties that we have.
If there was ever a year that Trevor Story needed to have a career year, this would have been the year. This felt like just a lot of pressure that he was putting on himself, expectations, and he's having it. It looks like he's feeling it too. You know how he likes to kind of express himself. Just your thoughts on how Trevor Story's been playing.
Very proud of him. Very proud of him. You know how it is. Like last year, if he was another guy, he would rehab and go home, right? And he did everything possible to be part of the group, to be part of the team. And, you know, yeah, we were playing meaningful games in September. Not really. But he made a point that I have to finish healthy. I got to show these guys that this is what a professional athlete does. You know, you get paid, you have to play. And he played in September. It didn't go well. But the fact that he played, it was great. Had a great offseason. May was horrendous, but he's been very consistent since that road trip in to Milwaukee and Atlanta. Defensively, he's a plus-plus defender. Base running-wise, he's elite, and he's using the whole field too. You saw him yesterday shooting the ball to right center, and he's enjoying it. This, you know, he's been in the playoffs once with the Rockies. We talked about it the other day. We had breakfast. It was Alex, Roman, Trevor, and myself, and he was talking about that game in Wrigley Field against the Cubs. I think it was a 1-0 game, and he was going over every play and this and that, and he wants to get back, you know. And one thing for sure, and I tell you guys, yesterday after the sixth inning, this place was very October-like. You know, it was very loud, people having fun, putting pressure on the opposition, and hopefully we can continue to play good baseball and make this place magical again.
I was watching with the family last night, and the energy in the household was October-like, yeah. Especially when it was you guys would go down 7-5, like, what happened to Crochet? But then the offense comes back, incredible eighth inning as well, and it was huge not having to use Chapman in the ninth.
Yeah. I mean, whenever we don't have to use him and we're winning games, that's good for us.
Yeah, absolutely. But as far as that energy goes, you know, when there is an injury, like, you know, even though he's a rookie, certainly going to play like one, who are you going to look to, or who are you going to lean on to make sure at no point do people get down on the team or like, oh, if only Roman were here, like make sure that energy stays up where you've had it, what that pitch for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it started with the interview, right? I was very honest. It sounds harsh, like I said, but next, you know, we have to move on. We have to be ready. The guys in the clubhouse, they know that. You look at that green monster, you see the standings, you know, that's plenty of motivation to keep going, and we will.
Will Fleming, our buddy, mentioned something on the broadcast yesterday about you guys did some extra bunting recently.
And,
And early in the year, we were talking a lot about fundamentals and young players and player development and all those things. And the more you win, the less we talk about those things. It's funny how that works. But the extra bunting, is that with an eye on situational playoff baseball? What was that all about?
No, it's an eye on September. And as an industry, not too many teams work on bunting, and then all of a sudden in September, there's a man on first and second in the eighth, and you want Connor Wong to get it down, but we don't practice it. And I told Ramon Vasquez, our bench coach, I say, hey, man, we're asking these guys to do something that we don't practice. We usually don't practice. We have to do it. We have to do it. And yesterday there were six or seven guys that we recognized that maybe we will ask them to do it. It's the three catchers, Jaron against lefties, Sudan, who else was out there? There was one more guy. And, you know, it's not that we're going to start playing small ball, but, you know, when we need it, we're going to do it. We won a game early in the month, you know, against Houston. You know, we put pressure on Framber. We bunted, we ran, we did a lot of good things fundamentally. So, you know, we just got to be better at that. And that, I take the blame for that. We haven't practiced, and now we will.
Sinan, I just, you know, you look at the night last night, what do you have, two hits, four RBIs, and a home run, and he plays center. He plays second. Is he the ultimate kind of Swiss Army knife for you?
He is. He is. And I'm glad that he was able to smile yesterday. It's been a while. He's been struggling. But that was a huge swing yesterday, that homer. You know, they scored seven of our big guy, and he comes back, gets a hanging slider, hits it out of the ballpark, and the energy came back. So very, very proud of him. I still believe, you know, with time, the struggles in August, and hopefully he doesn't struggle in September, but physically he's going to be a lot stronger in the upcoming years. I'm not saying he's gaining 30 pounds in the offseason, but he's still playing at 165. It's very hard to play 162 in that weight, and, you know, he keeps trying, and he eats, and he doesn't gain it. And I feel sometimes, you know, the season wears on him. But like I told him the other day, man, it's September. We're right there. Don't think about anything else. Just win games. And yesterday he did an amazing job.
I won't walk into the whole, you know, we're going to trump you up for Manager of the Year, given everything that's gone through this year.
Oh, Jose Espada.
Although I know when we asked you earlier this season what grade you'd give yourself, you jokingly said, I always give myself an A, bro, which was one of our favorite lines. but is there any consideration maybe to Christian Campbell rejoining the team at any point?
I think everybody's in play, you know, and obviously guys that are in the organization, they can, you know, if they get here, they can play in the playoffs. He's doing a better job offensively, controlling the strike zone. There's still a few things that we want to see for him to keep getting better. Like we told him, you can hit 500 and probably you won't get back because you're not doing certain things, or you can be hitting 180 and you're doing the things that, you know, we feel like it's making you a better player, you might be back. So there's no rush. He's doing a better job. He's playing the outfield a lot, so we'll see what happens.
Before we let you go, you had one of those fun Fenway moments the other day, the Trevor Story home run replay, pesky pull, Mike Brenly, I guess a replay of one of your home run, like, that was kind of a crazy situation all the way around, right?
Yeah, so the night before, they usually show highlights of the pass in the third or fourth inning. And it was my only homer at Fenway. It was against Doc Holliday. And it was a fly ball to right field. And, you know, like, it was like 375, you know. And Alexis Rios bobbled it like four times, and the ball went out of the ballpark, right? And it was a homer, and the guy saw it, you know. They were in the dugout, like, oh shoot, you know, that was your only homer. I'm like, yeah. And then that happened, and Trey was like, just like yours. But we're having fun, man. We're having a blast. I think, like I said, you know, when you come here and you feel dragging or you feel tired, you know, you go out there at 7:05 and the fans are here, they get you going. The city, you feel it, you know. The guys have been out there, restaurants and all that, and it's a lot different than the last 3 years, I'll tell you that.
All right, Alex, good luck tonight. We'll talk to you next week. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox here on WEEI Afternoons.
The Red Sox front office report with Chief Baseball Officer Craig Breslow is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and by findmassmoney.gov. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. The Roman Anthony news yesterday was like a kick in the nuts.
Yeah, that was a tough one. You know, we have seen what Roman adds to our team in a really short amount of time. He's emerged as one of the best players in this league. But I think time and time again, the team has proven to be resilient in overcoming adversity, and this is going to be another challenge that we're going to have to figure out how to overcome.
You never know with injuries, obviously, but do you lean more toward the 4 weeks or the 6 weeks?
I think it makes sense to be optimistic. Certainly Roman and our medical staff are committed to doing everything that they can to get him back on the field. So, you know, we're going to hold out hope that he's going to be able to get back on the field and help us.
Craig, when it comes to an oblique, it's not something that you can just fix with surgery. So how hard is it to balance not rushing him back, but getting him back in a certain amount of time to help you guys while also not bringing him back too early where an oblique can get re-aggravated so quickly?
Yeah, that's the balance that we've got to figure out. You know, we're all aware of what the timeline is in terms of the regular season, and, you know, our ambitions for playing deep into the postseason. So we'll do everything we can to get him back out, but we have to do that responsibly, you know, and make sure that we're not putting himself or the team in a worse position by trying to move this along too quickly.
Are there any analytics on recovery time that we could use over there?
Unfortunately, there are a lot of examples of oblique injuries. So, you know, this isn't new to the sport, or I guess any rotational sport. But yeah, I think we're going to take this one on a case by case basis, and we're going to throw everything we can at it.
All right.
Speaking of analytics, what do your analytics tell you about Crochet with 4 or 5 days in between starts?
Yeah, you know, his performance has been a little bit better with the extra rest, but you balance that with some of the feedback you get from Garrett and talking about how, you know, the 4-day routine allows him to feel sharp. But we're mindful of the overall season workload and where he is relative to the number of innings he's thrown in years past. I think the way the schedule is set up is such that he's going to get an extra day, you know, the next couple turns through, and we'll try to balance these games being really, really meaningful with knowing how important he is to what we're trying to accomplish down the stretch and then potentially into the postseason. But most importantly, we've got to get there. So, you know, we'll continue to talk to him and monitor the workload.
And Craig, I know getting there is the biggest thing, and you've talked about winning the division. Obviously, that's a goal of the organization. However, isn't it more important to get to the playoffs with a rested Crochet as opposed to winning the division but having Crochet not at his best?
I think it's a fair question. I'm not sure it's kind of as binary as that, right? Because having Crochet contribute you know, over the next few weeks is going to be a really important piece of helping us get into the postseason. But yeah, you know, we've got other guys in the rotation as we've seen that are stepping up, and we'll get, you know, our second look at Peyton Tolley here tomorrow night. And so I think we're going to have some flexibility, and, you know, Alex and I are talking through this with the pitching group, with the rest of the office, and just making sure that we are flexible, giving ourselves as many options as possible to both win the games that we're playing each day and then also think a little bit more about the big picture. But I will go back to, none of this matters if we don't get into the postseason.
Craig, you talk about your rotation. Your top three guys look very good. Big Stash, I have high expectations for him.
Whoa. Which nickname do you prefer so far when it comes to Peyton Tolley?
This is the first time I've heard Big Stash, but I really like that.
Okay,
we'll see if we can get some momentum with that.
Yeah.
Well, okay. What's your expectations for him? Because I think if he...
I prefer Magnum P.I.G. I also like Notorious P.I.G.
Okay.
But anyway, go ahead. Yes.
But the expectation for him, I think if he can solidify that fourth starter, I think you guys can really do some damage in the postseason. What are your expectations for him moving forward?
Yeah, I think we've got to be reasonable with, you know, what the expectations are that we set for him, just given that, you know, this is his first professional season. But, man, it was really easy to get excited about what we saw at Fenway last week when he was, you know, going pitch to pitch with Skeens. We've talked about, there are some things that he can do that not too many people can, just in terms of that elite extension. And so the fastball plays way up. And so, you know, at 98, we saw it just be completely unhittable. But even at 94, 95, it's a really, really good pitch. So, you know, I think each time out, he's going to get a little bit more comfortable. We've managed his innings throughout the season so that if we got to this point, you know, he's able to go out there and compete and pitch into games. So I don't want to set any limitations to what we think he's capable of doing. And we'll figure out how to use him, you know, and as the best weapon we can over the next few weeks.
A few weeks ago, we asked you about any discussions with Aroldis Chapman, and you had said not much was going on there. And then we got the news about the new deal. What was the turnaround there?
Yeah, so that came together really quickly. And in order for that to happen, I think there are a few things that need to align, because most importantly, we don't want to go to a player or his agent and create a distraction, you know, in late August, early September, as we're trying to compete for a playoff berth. But Aroldis was very outspoken about how much he's enjoyed his time here, which I think is a testament to the fans, to the organization, to AC and Bales and the pitching group and to his teammates. And so when we were able to engage with his agent Adam Kass from Wasserman, things were able to move pretty quickly because both sides recognized a chance to get to a deal.
Craig, Alex Bregman dealt with injury this season, but where do you, your assessment of him right now, where we stand going into September, then hopefully into October, where is he for this team so far?
Yeah, so physically, you know, he improves every time he's out on the field. We saw it the other night when he had a beat out an infield single down the first baseline, right? He was setting a speed record, I think, relative to the pace at which he was getting down the line earlier. So I think he's just getting a little bit more comfortable strength coming back, and he's trusting the quad a little bit more now than he had. And I think he knows exactly what it means to be playing games that matter in September. There, you know, isn't a guy with more of a championship pedigree that you could want on your team. So we're very confident that he's going to be able to contribute on the field, and then off the field, he's just been so valuable. I've talked about that, you know, every time his name comes up, even when he wasn't on the field or maybe going through a little bit of a slump right now, it hasn't changed the way that he's helped others prepare, you know, and try to be just an incredible resource and teammate to the rest of the guys.
Craig, we've seen a lot of younger guys this year come up and really be guys that have contributed to this big league team, and they've come up relatively quickly. Is this something that, you know, is going to be the new thing maybe in baseball moving forward, where, you know, these guys might not have to spend as much time in the minor leagues, especially if they're productive down there?
Yeah, I think that's a trend that will continue for a few reasons. One, I think players as amateurs, whether that's high school, college, they're used to more of a pro environment in terms of resources and, you know, the things that matter and the things that are getting measured. And then I think the other side of that, so I think, you know, players are probably a little bit more advanced or kind of mature relative to the game. And then I think the other thing is what all this information does is it allows people in front offices to maybe better project or translate how a performance in the minor leagues might look in the big leagues without having to see a player perform at every level, right? So we look at, you know, a batted ball and against certain type of competition, and we look at the swing, and we look at, you know, pitch movement and command and locations and say, despite the fact that this guy has never pitched in the big leagues, we can compare this to the types of pitches that have been successful in the big leagues and feel like that's a favorable comparison.
Is there another position perhaps that Jordan Hicks could play?
I mean, I think we all see the stuff, right? And it's been a really tough go for him here, but he's committed to doing all of the work necessary to get back on track. And, you know, our pitching group is invested in him because we've seen him be a dominant reliever. And we've just got to get to that consistent execution that will enable him to do so.
Rough week for Jordans. So, Craig, I know we watched Moneyball and we all see the Billy Bean approach that playoffs are a crapshoot when it comes to analytics. Do you believe that as well, that in a short series – the numbers can be totally skewed and that it doesn't represent the true talent of the team?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable because every analyst, everyone who will point to a data to point to data will also talk about the sample size, right? And you need to get enough information for that to be representative of the bigger trend. And in, you know, a short series in a small amount of time, anything goes. And we've seen dominant starting pitching, you know, can carry a team through the playoffs, a dominant bullpen because bullpen, you know, relievers throw a disproportionate number of innings in the postseason. So, you know, I do think that, you know, teams that make it deep into the postseason are often teams that kind of play well at the right time. And so that's why we're committed to doing everything we can to get to the postseason. And then at that point, you know, let this team that has been so resilient and has risen to the challenge have a chance to do it again.
Craig Breslow, September baseball, very exciting around these parts this year. And we thank you for taking the time this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Okay. Back on track. His ERA is 8.
Yeah.
But maybe,
I was going to ask.
Maybe back on track. Maybe. Craig's I like the optimism. Guy. I love the optimism. Yeah.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
WEEI Afternoons, Patriots Monday on a Tuesday after Labor Day. And we go to the phone lines now to talk to the quarterback of the New England Patriots. Drake May on Patriots Monday on WEEI is brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health with six New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com. And by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Drake May, how are we doing today?
What's going on? I'm doing all right.
Yeah, we're doing well. So the team announced its captains this week, and we've talked to you a lot about leadership and being the quarterback, but you were officially named a team captain. I'm wondering, A, what does that honor mean to you? And B, what are the duties in your mind that go with that?
Yeah, I think first of all, yeah, what a great honor. I think it comes with a lot of responsibility. I think it's something great when, you know, the players vote on it and your teammates, you know, pick you as a captain. It's always a great feeling. And it shows, you know, what I've done, but also, like you said, there's, you know, more work to do in the future, and that's leading the guys, and that's, you know, acting like a captain and playing like a captain and doing all the things that kind of expect us a captain would. And like I said, it's a great honor. There's been plenty of people in this Patriots uniform as a captain that's such great players, so it's a lot to live up to.
Drake, just to get in some of the nuts and bolts of what you're doing out there, it feels like compared to last year that you have a little bit more freedom to get into different or better plays at the line of scrimmage based on what the defense is showing. Is that the case? And if so, how's that been going for you?
Yeah, I think it's something when you've seen defenses and I've played them for a year, you know, something that you kind of get a feel for of getting into good plays and seeing stuff and seeing stuff the defense is doing and being able to get, you know, the offense into better plays, or I think it's something that kind of it comes naturally in this offense, but I think it's also something that you kind of build on as you, you know, play quarterback in this league and have learned from previous either mistakes or plays that went well for you of, hey, I may think this guy's blitzing or stuff like that. Just kind of little things you pick up as you play.
Drake, have you and Josh McDaniels been spending a little extra time together, not only obviously trying to understand the playbook to the best of your ability, but also getting into the week one plan? And what's the comfort level right now between you and Josh?
Yeah, I think it's always huge to be on the same page with the coordinator. You know, seeing things the same way, expecting to get, you know, these looks. And I think it's always, you know, great when you got a coordinator who's, you know, fully confident in me. And I think he's just trying to get us in the best looks, and he does it at a high level. So I'm looking forward to getting out there and trying to execute it.
Patriots quarterback Drake May here with us on WEEI Afternoons. Drake, obviously it's game week. You got the Raiders on Sunday. Does that feel any different? Like, is there an uptick in urgency or energy around the building or anything like that this week?
Oh, 100%. We're playing, playing a new team that you know is different than a preseason game, different than joint practice. You know, it counts in the record books and it counts in the standings. You're going out there and trying to go 1-0, and I think that's the big. The kind of big juice. I think everybody's kind of excited for week one around the league. So it's a great, you know, opportunity for us to, you know, get off to a good start and for us to kind of, you know, showcase what we've been trying to build in our identity.
You know, Drake, you look at different facets of your offense, and it's hard not to kind of get excited at the running back position. It looks like you got three guys that just kind of offer a little something different, each one of them. How excited are you to utilize those guys not only in the running game but in the passing game?
Yeah, I mean, those guys, they often have a room like we have. I mean, you know, three different guys that can, you know, make you miss, can you know, catch the ball out of the backfield, know what they're doing in pass protection. It's a great tool that we have, and it's just my job to try to, you know, get us in the best run looks and get them the ball in space when we are throwing it. So that's always it's good having, you know, numerous options and guys that, you know, run the ball so well.
So, Drake, obviously you're a captain, team leader as well. It naturally comes with the quarterback position as well. What happens when there's a disturbance or like a surprise, like late last week, Jabril Peppers gets released on a Friday? Do players look to you to calm things down, and how did you guys handle that?
Yeah, I think it's always, you obviously, you know, it's one of those things that's part of the business. It's so unfortunate with somebody that you kind of get to know with, you know, get to know well, and a veteran in this league that I respected. You know, but I think it's, at the end of the day, what we're trying to, you know, establish around here is putting trust in the coaching staff, putting trust in, you know, respecting what they do. And I think that's what just the kind of guys that look around and say, hey, you know, with Pep, you know, a guy that, you know, made some plays in a Patriots uniform and played a lot in the past couple of years. But hey, I think, I think there's two sides to it. You care about the person and the relationship you have with Pep, but also you care about the team and knowing that they're trying to do the best for this football team this year.
We've heard Mike Vrabel talk a lot about identity and establishing an identity, and it seems to be a lot about physicality and finishing plays and different things like that. As a quarterback, that's not really your area of expertise. You're not really blocking anybody, tackling anybody, quote-unquote finishing plays with physicality. How does Drake May help establish the identity of the New England Patriots under Mike Vrabel's leadership?
Yeah, I think just bring a presence to the huddle. I think, having command in the offense. I think having command in the offense, bringing a presence to the huddle, kind of giving extra tidbits in the huddle of, certain plays or key details, just kind of being sharp with my game. And then at the end of the day, when I'm out there playing, being willing to, step up in the pocket, take some hits and be able to kind of stick my, hang in there in the pocket and make some throws while getting hit. I think that stuff is kind of what, people may not see during the game, but, what they can see on tape. And I think that's what, great quarterbacks around the league, that I watch, hang in there and take hits and get up and just continue to get out there and compete. And that's the biggest thing, compete.
Drake, your legs are a weapon, man. You're just running outside the pocket, quarterback design runs. Do you envision yourself maybe using your legs a little bit more in this year's offense compared to speaking to last year?
Yeah, I think it's a tool that utilize when the play breaks down or on a scramble play, and also something that I may be able to gain extra hat in the run game. So I'm looking forward to doing whatever I can to in short yardage or in the red zone or just kind of keep the defense honest. I think it's a weapon, and it's tough, for these defenses in third down and third and short when they got everybody covered, downfield, and you go up there and pick up a first down. So I think it's a great tool, and also I'm going to still try to do my best to, get to the guys that are better runners than I am.
Patriots quarterback Drake May joining us here on WEI Afternoons on a Patriots Monday on a Tuesday. Drake, and just sort of getting to know you, not only just as the quarterback of the Patriots, but also Drake May, athlete, Patriot, et cetera. Just kind of curious, do you have any, like, night before the game rituals, any game day rituals, like, do you, music you like to listen to, a certain meal you like to eat, stuff like that?
No, I'm pretty simple. I think I kind of try to go out there and create the same routine out there on the field, throwing wise, try to throw the receivers, then try to use some of the equipment managers extra to kind of get some extra throws in, and then come back. And I like taking a shower before the game to kind of, feel nice and fresh before, getting the uniform. But, that's really it. Nothing before the night before, you're just looking over the game plan and hanging out with some teammates. And then from there, just being confident and being cool and getting ready for, to go out there.
As you look at the Raiders defensively, Max Crosby has to jump off the film for anybody who watches that team. When a team has I've heard coaches call them game wreckers, guys like Max Crosby, as the quarterback, how important is it to know where he is on every play, pre-snap, but also post-snap, because he seems like one of those high-motor guys that can get you from almost anywhere? How big a part is Max Crosby of what they're going to do to you?
Yeah, he's a huge part. I think, anywhere he lines up, he's a problem. I think he plays hard. He doesn't like getting blocked. And I think, he's done it, for a long time in this league and has, wrecked a lot of plays. So just being smart and, being smart with the football and trying to do my best to get it out quick and kind of neutralize him. And then from there, also just find a way scheme-wise to, like I said, neutralize him and do the best we can to not let him make big negative plays.
Drake, back in the day when I played inside backer, I'd always entice the nose tackles. If it's Seymour, Ted Washington, Vince Wilfork, I'd entice them with a steak dinner if they kept the centers off of me. And I'm just wondering, have you done that with your tackles? You keep Max Crosby off of me, you keep me clean. Have you enticed them with a nice steak dinner or something like that yet?
Yeah, I mean, that's always something with those guys up front that, it's always rewarding when I think the biggest thing, from last year I found is you got to get a win out of it. And I think it's always huge when those guys up front protect me, and I think reward them with something, in a big win. I think that's always something that I'd like to do and would like to do in the future. So I think, no doubt, I think having an extra incentive, and I think they always want to, play hard, but I think even having something extra with, some camaraderie is awesome.
There you go.
So, short of putting together something like a vision board or – you know, like a goal chart, we'll say, Drake, do you have a set of goals for yourself for this season in particular? And what does that, what do those goals and success look like to you this year?
Yeah, I think just continue to take a step forward. I think take it one week at a time. In this league, you know, the weeks go by so fast, and just to know any week, you know, try to be my best out there. I hope to make the playoffs. That'd be an awesome goal. It's obviously on everybody's goal board, but from there, I think just do whatever I can as a captain for this team to showcase that and just continue to lead these guys and like I said, take the next step and on the field and hopefully off the field.
Drake, watching the Josh McDaniels offense over the years, we know the screen game has often been a big part of that. You just mentioned how much you like your running backs and how much they can make plays. How comfortable are you with the McDaniels screen game, and how much do you think that could be a weapon for this offense?
Yeah, it's a huge weapon, I think, for any offense. Being able to take some off the rush, take some off the our guys up front. I think being able to keep the defense honest when they're sitting back or getting into deep zone drops to get a screen out going, and it's always a comforting play and a play for us to know where the ball's going and make a safe throw, and then from there let those guys that are pretty darn good at running the football run in space.
I guess that's a good follow-up to what I want to ask you. I would think with Josh McDaniels being your OC that sometimes it's best to just take what the defense gives you and hit your checkdowns and outlet passes. Has that kind of been hammered into your psyche that sometimes if the play's not there deep, that it's best just to take what you can get underneath?
Oh, I think that's huge. That's something, as I learned, as the year went on last year, the best thing is positive plays and just keep moving chains, staying ahead of the chains. And I think we had some success offensively when I wasn't holding the ball and taking negative plays and taking sacks. So I think that's huge, emphasis for me to get the ball out on time and don't bypass, somebody on a shorter route or underneath, for something deeper down the field.
Drake, did you watch any college football this weekend?
I did. Yeah, I did. Obviously, had some days off, so was able to tune into college football. And, I took a look at that one last night. It was a good start in the first drive and wasn't the way I'm sure we wanted to end it. But, it's good to see, kind of football back. And obviously, wasn't the ending we wanted, but, pretty cool to see Coach on the sideline, Coach Belichick and those guys.
Time now for the quarterback question of the week, brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health with 6 New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com. It comes from Steven Seekonk in Great Minds Must Think Alike. He was asking, what did you think of Bill Belichick's debut, and how much have you talked to Coach Belichick? Do you have a relationship with Coach Belichick now that he's coaching your alma mater and you're one of the prime examples he can promote as great Tar Heel draft picks?
Yeah, over the summer and in the springtime, I went back a few times, Chapel Hill, and saw Coach and saw different events. So, just first off, I was honored to meet him. What a legendary coach, and I think he's going to, like you said, they got a bunch of new players kind of in the program, and they're figuring it out, college football. But, I got no doubt kind of in the future, his what he's done in the past and his proof of being a winning coach is going to come unfold. And I think just me kind of pouring into it, I'd love to kind of pick his brain. Football wise, it wasn't as much a chance to do that when I went back and visited, but I was out there at practice once and talked to the quarterback. So it was good to meet him and be out there and still support my school. And looking forward to following him this upcoming season and continue to see them kind of improve and get in touch with them, after the season.
All right, Drake, thanks for joining us today. We're looking forward to these weekly Patriots Monday chats, and good luck on Sunday against the Raiders.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, guys.
Yes, yeah, good luck.
Talk to you next week, Drake. See you. Drake May, quarterback of the New England Patriots.
High noon on a Patriots Monday. On a Tuesday, day after Labor Day, Jones and Keefe, WEEI. We got a key for madness for you at 12:45. Stay tuned for that every Tuesday. And every Tuesday at high noon, we talk to Tom E. Curran of NBC Sports Boston. He's brought to you by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. Tom E. Curran, welcome back to Jones and Keefe. What's going on?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very good.
We're doing great.
We've had some good Patriots interviews under our belt today, Hunter Henry and Christian Ellis. So you can add to that here, Curran. We've been talking a lot today about news that broke on Friday that we had a chance to react to a bit on Friday, the release
of Jabril Peppers. We've heard Vrabel discuss it a couple of different times. We asked Ellis and Henry about it. I'm curious your understanding on why they decided to move on from Peppers when they did.
Well, they didn't give a really defined reason, and Mike dismissed the notion that it was scheme-related from the podium yesterday, but certainly he's probably not one of their best 53 players. He's probably one of the best 12 players on the football team as a football player. So if you don't want him there, that must mean that he has a physical limitation to doing what you're trying to ask him to do, which to me, that feels like a scheme fit. So he's a bigger safety. He does come downhill. He's a violent hitter. If they want their safeties to be more in space, that's not really his game anymore. I shouldn't say anymore. He probably could do it. I mean, he was their best player in 2022 and 2023, in my opinion, on either side of the ball. So he could probably still do it. But I think the fact that they want people who are faster than Jabril is, and also the fact that he's probably not going to deal well with being a backup, would probably be reasons that the Patriots would say, you know what, he's a proud guy, he's still a good player, let's give him an opportunity to get out there and play someplace else.
Yeah, because my sort of Keefspiracy on this whole thing was we were so focused on Kyle Duggar, he's going to get cut, he's going to get traded, whatever, and then makes the team, then they get rid of Peppers. I feel like both guys probably received the same news that, hey, we're going to go with Hawkins and Woodson primarily at safety. Duggar probably said, okay, and, you know, I'll still show up and I'll still do my job, whereas Peppers perhaps reacted to it differently.
I don't know that to be the case, but yeah. I would say, too, if you're looking at both of these guys and you're paying $9 million in salary to Kyle Duggar and $4 million to Jabril Peppers, that's $13 million of guys standing there clapping with their helmets off.
Yeah.
You know, there should be a cost-saving measure there if you're not going to use them. I would. So I probably should have mentioned that, and Phil Perry mentioned that yesterday. It's a good point. Okay, so you're not going to be able to save the $9 million with Duggar. Does that still mean to just keep both of them sitting there for $13 million? I mean, $13 million buys you a nice player. So yep. Move on.
I'm curious, and Vrabel's distanced himself from this a couple of different times, both with you guys yesterday and this morning on the Greg Hill Show, that it's a concerted effort to move on from the leadership of Mayo and Belichick. Do you think that was a factor in what Vrabel's trying to do, get his guys in and move on from the leadership and some of those players from the last couple of years where they were a four-win team?
Yeah, that was the question that I asked him yesterday, and he said that there was no move afoot, and it's just okay, I'll take him at his words, and it's a wild coincidence that Dietrich Wise, Jonathan Jones, David Andrews, Joe Cardona, Devon Godshaw, Jabril Peppers, Kyle Duggar was on the block, Anthony Jennings was on the block. All of these guys were among their better players. Not a good team. Not a good team for several years running, two in particular. But I still think that there's, you know, NFL relevance. But, you know, what has the league done with Juwan Bentley? Ignored him. And that was another guy that they let go of. So it is interesting. I think if you want to get better, then you have to look with very clear vision as to whether or not these guys are good players or irreplaceable. So they've made that decision, I guess, with a lot of them who also had good leadership skills and were the kind of guys you wouldn't mind having as a next-door neighbor, but they don't want them on the team.
Yeah, speaking of leadership, the six captains were announced yesterday. Drake May, Robert Spillane, Hunter Henry, Marcus Jones, Harold Landry, and Brendan Schooler. Anything jump out to you about who was or maybe who wasn't named captains?
Yeah, no offensive lineman was a surprise to me, especially with Morgan Moses, and really his demeanor since he's been here has been very he's been very interested in bringing guys together and sending a message as a 34-year-old veteran. And Milton Williams, I think, has kind of walked the walk, at least talked the talk. I can't say until the season begins whether he is walking the walk. But he's talked the talk, certainly, as a high, big-ticket free agent signing. It opened my eyes at Harold Landry, who was kind of an afterthought free agent signing. You know, no major needle mover, becomes a captain. And the Diggs thing doesn't surprise me. It feels like he's a temp. So I don't understand.
He was a captain in Houston, you know, and that felt maybe similar. But, yeah, I get it. I'm not, like, overly shocked by it by any means. But, yeah, it was of note. He's definitely one of their veteran guys.
Yeah, he's one of their veteran guys, but do you want everybody doing things exactly as Stephon Diggs? Follow that guy. He's got the perfect lead.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a unique guy. So, and it's very clear, too, and this goes back to the question about the leadership. They've worked very hard to make sure that Drake May has every opportunity to assume the throne as the leader of the team. You know, from moving on from Joe Milton to Mike Vrabel making concerted efforts to say, go talk to them, go lead those guys, go, you know, make sure that you're on this stuff, to making sure he's the captain. You've seen it time and time again. So I think he's equipped to embrace the role, but they're very, I think, intent on making him the point of the spear.
That's this week's Drake Take by Tommy Curran, presented by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. Tommy,
are you serious?
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
That's awesome.
That was your Drake Take.
That's
your
Drake Take.
Yeah, right on there.
Yeah.
How about that? Every week, Tom, get ready for it.
Yeah, you better have a Drake take ready to go.
Yeah, we're going to need some Drake takes every single week. On Morgan Moses, is that a reason to read into? I hadn't really thought about this, so you brought it up. Is that a reason to read into, like, I don't want to say his security on the roster, he's here, but his
availability?
Yeah, his role as a starter or his availability, to Keith's point? Like, was that a hedge in any way about Morgan Moses on the field, in your view of it?
That didn't register with me, so I'm going to have to go no, and I'll be more surprised than you if it does have a reflection.
Okay, what about Steph Diggs? I was surprised he specifically, I'm sorry if you had more there, but I was surprised Diggs also wasn't given a token leadership role there on the team.
I'm just not. I don't know why you would do that. He's a temp, in my estimation, until proven otherwise. It's a marriage of convenience between the two sides. If they want to have something lasting and more beautiful, then perhaps 2026 can be the time. But, you know, given his off season, I don't know if you want to reward a guy with a leadership role. And it's voted on by the players, certainly, too. So they're reading that group as well. But there's, you know, Hunter Henry's the only skill position player. Is that right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
The only skill position player. No running backs.
Nope.
Stevenson, I think, has been a captain in the past. So, it's very interesting to see who ends up being the captain, but Vrabel tried to underscore everybody can lead. You don't need to have a C on your chest.
How would you view sort of the ceiling and the floor for this offense? You know, like if you, like the best case scenario would be what would like sort of the worst case scenario be?
The ceiling, I think, would be, oh boy, it's not that high. It really isn't.
You got a duck. The ceiling is the floor.
Yeah, you got a duck right through.
It's not that. Yeah, no. It's not cathedrals by any stretch.
No.
It's the ceiling would be extremely efficient, 2003 style Patriots offense. That would be the ceiling.
Okay.
They just don't have enough skill position players who I look at as being tremendously durable that you're going to be able to roll out there on the regular. They do have three very good running backs. They have two good to very good tight ends. They have an offensive line that I think will be adequate if guys don't get hurt. But they just don't have skill position players to make anybody say, wow, that's what are we going to do with? Look, DeMario Douglas is, knock on wood and hope it's not serious, he's going to get dinged up. He's too small to not, and he's going to get the ball too many times. Stephon Diggs probably isn't going to play 17 games. Efton Chisholm is not ready to, you know, be a 95-target guy or a 70-target guy or be in the Danny Amendola role. So, to me, Kayshon Booty is the most sturdily built guy in the group. So, to me, I look at that group and say, they're just not good enough to have a high ceiling. What's the floor? The floor will be dictated by Drake May and the offensive line, simply. Mm-hmm. And I think May is physically and mentally ready to ascend, not to ascend to, you know, Justin Herbert level. That's a good middling, lower elite quarterback, but at least ascend to highly capable, still prone to dumbness.
I imagine
that's not the Drake's kick.
No. We already
save some for next
use
week.
That up, but yeah, we'll use them all for this week. That's true. I imagine the ceiling for the defense is a little higher with Christian Gonzalez out there. What's your understanding with his timeline for a return?
And it was interesting to hear Vrabel over the last couple of weeks reference his contract. He seemed frustrated at one point in the recovery process. So how are the Patriots feeling about Gonzalez and his recovery?
I can't imagine they're psyched, whether they blame Christian Gonzalez for it or not. Seemed like Mike really labored to make sure that he was not misunderstood as being frustrated during yesterday's press conference. He used the word frustrated. Andrew Callahan from the Herald circled back and said, are you frustrated with Gonzalez? Said, no, thank you for allowing me. I just used the word frustrated in terms of Christian becoming frustrated with himself. So maybe they're not frustrated to an extent of what's he doing over there. It's more perhaps we really wish that that player was available and he's not. But to me, there's the difference between 100% and good to go. And good to go might be less than 100%. And if Christian Gonzalez is better than Alex Austin at 85%, and I don't even know that he's 85%. You know, we're not getting injury reports. We're not having the opportunity. They're not talking about injuries with us. That hasn't changed. So that's the question. Is Christian Gonzalez waiting till he's 100%? Or is he going to be blood and guts? Once I can get out there, I just put a splint on it. I'll run around with that on. I kind of highly doubt that. And that was, to me, if you scrolled back and listened to the answer that Vrabel gave the first week of training camp when asked about Christian Gonzalez, he talked 0% about Christian Gonzalez, the football player, and completely about every person here has to understand that there is a place where we meet, where you sacrifice for the team and give for the good of the team. And we also work to make sure that you're advancing your personal gain, brand, and business. So that was the answer given to a question about Christian Gonzalez, which is one of the only reasons that I keep wondering, is there more to it than a bad hamstring? And is it protecting future investments, which all players should do? Mm-hmm. But there does become a gray area in that decision as to, okay, am I good enough to help this team out? Or everybody gets the conversation. I'm going to shut up.
You've covered Josh McDaniels for many, many years. Is this game going up against the team that fired him a couple of years ago? Like, is he looking at this super motivated, or is McDaniels somebody that's like, this is week one of a 17-game schedule?
I think he's got so much history over the course of time, even at his young age, that he probably won't look at that as I'm going to try and go get even with the Raiders. I really do. I don't think that would be a motivating factor for him. And you know what? I mean, sadly, he kind of had it coming to him. It was not going great out there.
No.
The team was not heading in the right direction for whatever reason. But I would imagine that that's low on his priority list. However, we get access to him on Thursday, so we'll ask him.
Oh, very good.
Oh, nice. We'll look forward to that. Did you catch any of Bill last night?
Caught a bunch of Bill.
What'd you think? It was a good start.
Did you stay longer than most of the fans in the stands?
Yeah, I hung in there. Yeah. I hung in there, and I watched the post-game press conference in its entirety.
Me too.
Boy, did they make him dangle. Stacey would have cut that mess off 15 minutes earlier. Look, he's got 70 new players. But what's interesting to me about this is, you know, okay, what am I thinking? What's the thought that I walk away with? In Bill We Trust worked here because he built the trust beginning in 2003 with Lawyer Malloy, extending through all those. What did he just do? Decisions, and then bad things would happen. 2003, they lose 31-0 in the opener and release Lawyer Malloy. And they get beat by Drew Bledsoe. And by the end of the year, they're beating Buffalo 31-0 and then winning a Super Bowl. And that's where In Bill We Trust came. Really didn't exist that greatly prior to that. You know, he had a great year in 2001. But he hasn't done anything yet except bring, honestly, a level of embarrassment to North Carolina because of the off-field stuff that has gone on. And then with the great unveiling, they get their ass kicked up between their ears. And to me, if you're a professor or a dean who's already irritated about the sports ball coach making $10 million and bringing the fine university into a level of at least embarrassment, you are saying, what are we in this for again? So he's going to have to really make some hay against UNC Charlotte.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the schedule opens up for him a little bit in the coming weeks. I kind of feel like it's a one-and-done scenario, and I thought it was, even as this offseason played out and he was, it was sort of like an embarrassment or a PR nightmare after the next, then it got kind of quiet. Then you take the field, you're the only game in town, and you get blown out at home. It might be a long season for him, and you mentioned 70 new players. Well, if he does come back for year two, it's probably 70 more new players. That's just sort of the nature of college football now, and so I think this is it. I think he maybe, as well as the school at the end of the year, are going to be like, all right, we tried, and then kind of move on.
Yeah, it's I would say that is certainly high on the list of possibilities, one and done. I don't think he's going to be getting back to the NFL if he can't cut it at North Carolina with his coaching. And it's going to be a lot harder to reach kids than it was young men when he would reach them with the Patriots, with on to Cincinnati or any level of irritations. These guys are going to be hearing it on social media. Your team sucks. You suck. That guy's too old. And it's different than it was in 2003 when Lawyer Malloy was released. To put it mildly.
Yeah. Okay, he's Tom E. Curran every Tuesday at high noon here on Jones and Keefe. We call it Tom E. Tuesday. You can check him out, NBC Sports Boston. Follow him on Twitter at Tom E. Curran. Tom, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay, Tom E. Curran and his Drake takes here every Tuesday.
He had some room to spare there.
He sure did. It was a strong take. We're joined now by Patriots tight end Hunter Henry, who's brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair, by Shaw's and Star Market. You can go shopping and get rewarded, and by Verizon. The New England Patriots are powered by Verizon 5G. Now, Hunter Henry is a three-time Patriots captain. We found that out yesterday. He's also the winner of the Ron Burton Community Service Award. So, Hunter Henry, thanks for joining us here again on a Patriots Monday. Welcome back.
Thank you.
What do those two things mean to you? You're a captain now the third year in a row, three different coaches, Belichick, Mayo, and now with Vrabel as well, and the Community Service Award, the Ron Burton Community Service Award. What do those mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, start with the captain, man. Just the respect to your peers, respect to your teammates. I just try to be as consistent as I can as a man on and off the field. It's just definitely an honor to be able to, have that and don that. It's definitely a big privilege that I don't take lightly. And, the Burton Award is very special too. Obviously been here for a while and seen a number of guys that have won that. And, it's a select group of guys that are very, very special people. And to be able to kind of be in that same conversation as those guys is a big honor. And, the Burton family as well, just done so much for, this community, for the people around here. And so it is definitely an honor to be a Burton Award winner.
Drake May, a fellow captain with you on the offensive side, how have you seen his leadership sort of evolve over the year plus that he's been here?
Yeah, Drake's doing a tremendous job of that, man. I think he's always been a natural leader in a way. But and just getting a feel for everything last year, just as a rookie and getting a feel for everything, I think that just kind of comes with time. And, he's done a great job of stepping up, being vocal, and he's doing a great job of leading.
We got the news on Friday that Jabril Peppers released by the New England Patriots. He's been a teammate of yours the last few years. What was your reaction to that move?
Yeah, I mean, I think Coach addressed that yesterday, obviously. This is a tough business sometimes, and it's hard to, you play with a lot of guys, and then, and they go in different directions. But, Pep is a tremendous player, man. It was an honor to suit up with him every single Sunday. And, I think Coach addressed all the business side of things. But just as a teammate, man, he was great. Enjoyed my time with him for sure. He's a tremendous competitor.
We just had Christian Ellis on the show, and he read about the release of Peppers before he heard about it from the team. How did you get the information?
Yeah, I was the same. I mean, yeah.
Were you surprised? Because I was definitely surprised. I mean, we were, on our job, we're speculating on roster cuts and everything else. Then there is cut down day. Then another day, you get Kendrick Bourne. Another day, Javon Baker. Then a few days later, you get Peppers. So I know personally, I was very surprised.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is
one of the toughest businesses in the world, man. It really is. There's a lot of hard decisions being made. You know, coach addressed all that stuff yesterday. And so, you know, I'm going to let him answer those questions that you guys want to get asked. But, you know, Pep, like I said, was a tremendous teammate, competitor, guy that I, you know, enjoyed being around. I wish him the best for sure. But, you know, as far as all the decisions and all that stuff, you can ask Coach about that one.
Hunter Henry joining us here on a Patriots Monday, on a Tuesday, on Jones and Keefe. You're about to start up your 10th year in the NFL, your fifth in New England. You mentioned it's a tough business. Was there a move that stands out, like a move where you were like, oh, man, I can't believe this happened, sort of a welcome to the NFL sort of realization of how hard the business is?
Gosh, it's probably my rookie year. We got banged up on at the running back position out in, when I was in San Diego, and they had a new locker mate that was a new running back like 7 weeks in a row. And I was introducing myself like somebody new every week, and I was just like, man, this is different. This is very, very different. Like, it's just, you know, obviously these guys were getting banged up and like hurt and stuff, but it was just crazy to see, you know, the change every single week in a way. I learned a lot about the business that year for sure.
You know, it seems like around the league, there's like a tight end fraternity. You guys have tight end day. It was a like, tight end university and all that stuff that everybody gets together on. Have you had a chance to – have you talked to or do you know Brock Bowers at all?
I have not.
You've not. Have you been able to watch his game, though, from afar and see what he's been able to do in just one season?
I have, yeah, man. I mean, I was impressed with him in college. Always was a fan from afar. Obviously, winning the Mackey Award twice is a tremendous honor that I think he deserved, you know, for sure. You know, one of the best tight ends to ever suit up at college, and then he's already transferred that over to the, you know, to our level. So, you know, he had a tremendous year last year. You know, he's a tremendous player. He's a threat at, you know, every single level, deep, intermediate, short. You know, he's got a little bit of everything in his game. Great route running, run after the catch, great hands. I mean, he's got everything you want in the tight end for sure. He's an impressive dude. And so, you know, he's a great player that we're definitely going to have to be able to match up against this weekend.
Did you get a chance to watch Bill's debut at UNC last night?
I saw a little bit, yes.
What'd you think?
Yeah, I was, you know, I think Bill saw something where Bill said, I mean, obviously it wasn't the debut they wanted. Not the best way to start out, but you know, I think you learn a lot about going to play a game. And you know, I know Bill, he's gonna have those guys in the film room and learning from it fast.
Did it surprise you? I'm asking a lot of surprise questions, but did it surprise you that he went to college and took the North Carolina job all those months ago?
Y'all digging for the surprise in the day, huh?
Well, I mean,
y'all
two things.
Going after, y'all trying to see how surprised I am today, or
we're
what?
We're traditionally very surprised. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised by the Peppers cut. Yeah, that's why. Just, were you surprised that he went to college?
Y'all are just, like, surprising everything. Yeah, good Lord. I mean, no. Dude, Bill loves to coach. Bill loves to coach, man. Loves football. So, I mean, I think they gave him the opportunity, man. And I think he's ready to show by it. I mean, he's a tremendous football coach. So I think he's a tremendous competitor and at the same thing and loves to compete. So I think he was, you know, ready for the challenge.
Okay, Hunter Henry, every Patriots Monday here on Jones and Keefe. We'll ask you some more surprising questions next week. Hunter, thanks so much. Best of luck week one against the Raiders. Best of luck this season.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Hunter Henry.
Thank you.
Joining us here on Jones and Keefe.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.